Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento.
Turner Sparks just got married and has moved home to America after 12 years living in China. Sir Michael Ira Kaplan has 2 kids, a wife, a job, and has spent his entire life in the USA. Neither one can figure their country out. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America, episode 59. My name's Turner Sparks.
My name is Mordechai Kaplan, former ping pong player for the Israeli team.
You can find me at Turner B. Sparks on Twitter. You can find Kaplan at K-A-P, Cap in America. On the podcast today, we have Mr. Bing, Brian Goldberg. Cap, I believe you might have been referencing something that we're going to ask him about much later, which will make sense in about 30 minutes. Where do we start? Brian Goldberg is the owner of Mr. Bing, which is this Jim Bing, these Chinese crepe store in New York City. They have 4 stores. It's incredibly popular. It's growing. He is from New York. He lived in China. He came back to America. He opened this. He's done a lot of stuff along the way. We're going to get to that in a bit. But to start out, Cap, your soccer team, what's going on with Teddy?
Yeah, I got the last final game of the season's coming up this week. We have not won yet. We haven't won
We tied one when I was gone.
They told me it was a tie. Maybe they were lying to me. Okay. But we haven't won one since I've been on the sidelines. We had a couple games since we've last spoke. One of the games we got run off the field to the point where the other coach apologized to me, said I'm really sorry. He was like trying to help us score. He was like basically ordering his kids to stand all the way back after they would score.
He was treating you like a special kid.
Yeah, and I was trying to like fire the team up. Look what he's doing. Get out there. And it didn't work.
That's a slap in the face.
But then we played a team the following week, last week, that I was like, oh, my God. Early on, we jumped out to a 3-0 lead.
Oh, my gosh.
The kids were focused. They were playing defense. I was like, we're going to win this game.
They slap on the floor.
And, you know, Teddy, after the 3-0 lead, then came out like gangbusters in the second half and had a hat trick.
He did?
And
second half hat trick?
Yeah, and yet we still lost 7-6, I believe. But, you know, it was because our best player got hit in the head with a ball, and then he didn't want to play anymore. And it was like Teddy was out there with 2 kids. He was really carrying the team out there in the second half. And he wanted to win. And
look at you, blaming the rest of the team.
Well, here's what I'm saying. I'm saying Teddy came to play. He's saving the coach. He's basically saying, if I'm coming back next year, you got to bring the coach back with you.
Sure.
So that I appreciate that good effort. But this week, I'm going to need him, and I'm going to need the other kids to rally around this coach.
We need the whole team.
If you believe in me, guys, I need a win. I need one win. Nobody wants to – you don't want – We got the first pick locked up. We can win now. No more tanking.
Have you ever thought possibly that they're throwing games to try to get you fired?
Oh, my God.
That old move.
Oh, you think they've quit on me? The team's quit on me?
The minute they get a new coach in, they're going to start winning games immediately.
I'm like Jeff Fisher or something.
You are.
Next year, some smart guy who actually knows where you're supposed to kick the ball, what part of the foot's going to come in, and they're going to...
I believe they've quit on you.
All right. Well, we'll find out soon.
All right. Well, we'll see. But also, coming up, November 30th, everybody, live podcast. Get your tickets are on sale now. StandUpNewYork.com, StandUpNY.com. Go there. You can go to our website. We have a link. So on the show, we have Ronnie Chang from The Daily Show is going to be doing stand-up. Plus, this is going to sit down for an interview in front of a live audience. We have Michael Costa from The Daily Show. Stand-up plus live interview. We have a special guest we cannot announce yet. Mystery guest who's going to sit in for the news with us. It's going to be fantastic. Tickets are $10 if you use the promo code ENSE,
E-N-S-E,
at checkout. but only before November 26th. That is this Sunday.
So, and frankly, it's going to be sold out before then anyway, so get moving, people.
Get your tickets, because otherwise the price goes up to $15 after that. So get them while they're hot. Get them while they're $10.
Yeah, and even if you tell your friends, even if they don't like our podcast, if they like The Daily Show, come on out. And
exactly. Know. If you like us or The Daily Show, we're basically polar opposites. So you're going to like one or the other. Right? Yeah. And if you can't come to New York, fly into New York. But if you can't come to New York, go to Amazon.
Yeah. And if you fly in, I will buy you a drink.
Look at that.
So there you go.
Cap will buy you a drink. Blue Shirt's already got his tickets. He's going
to
be there.
Yeah. He actually went somewhere else and is taking a flight now to come in so he can get me to buy him a drink.
Ikram's going to be there. All the pod characters are coming in for this.
Yeah,
it's going to be a blast.
Randy, everyone's going
to
be there.
Yay is going to be there, Randy. And Amazon, last thing, Amazon, support our pod. If you can't come to the live show, go to Amazon. Go to our website, lostinamericapod.com. Click in the top right-hand corner of the Amazon advertisement. It doesn't say Amazon on it. It's very confusing. Once you click that, it'll take you back to Amazon, do your regular shopping. Yeah. A percentage of whatever you buy comes to us.
Get all of your Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa gifts there.
The holidays are here.
Yeah.
Should we get to Lost in America?
Sure, let's do it.
Play the music. All right, we're back. Cap, once again, you're lost in America this week. What's going on?
This is breaking news. An email just came in, and it's got me kind of crap my pants here. I'm a little nervous. I don't know how to proceed.
What is it?
I just got an email from the I get so much email from this soccer league, from the commissioner and the coordinators, and there's so many people involved in this league. I got invited to a party this weekend for the volunteers. I got invited to a game to play in, which I'm not going to go to because as bad as I am as a coach, I don't want anyone to see me as a player. That will just ruin all the whole mystique.
So what's the email?
But this is the third email I got. Three emails came in, and the third email says, I got to do evaluations. New way of doing it this year, it says on here. And it says because they want – essentially they want to make sure that the teams are balanced. And there's games – there's teams in the spring and the fall, the season. They want to make sure the teams are balanced. They clearly didn't do a good job of that for the fall based on the way my team –
considering you lost every game.
Yeah. So they want you to rate your kids for skills in offense, defense, goal, all their skills, and they're going to use that ranking to then try to balance things out for the spring and make sure that they divide up the teams.
So one more time. So they want you to rate the players on your team.
Right, exactly.
Done. Let's do it.
Okay.
Are we rating now?
I mean, no time like the present, right?
Yes, let's do it.
So
give me a couple things. What do we get, a 1 out of 10?
A 1 out of 10.
Okay, let's do it this way. You describe them, I'll give the rating.
And we're not going to be using any names here.
No
libel. No.
Exactly. We'll call him. Just don't say a name. Just say the Mexican kid, the fat Mexican kid.
I got the use
girl.
The fat Mexican. I would have put him in goal. You know. But anyway, or any fat kid for that matter.
Yeah.
But so okay.
Fat kids are better in goal because they take up more space.
Yeah, kids in goal. At this age, that's all they do. These kids have. It's like lay them down.
Just the law.
Because they're not allowed to use your hands. So there's no reflexes. It's the law of physics. Yeah, yeah. Block the goal. You could actually, I would have stuck four kids in the goal. That would never, wouldn't allow any points. It'd be amazing. But anyway, so, all right, so I got Kid A.
Okay, Kid A.
Kid A is kind of, doesn't like to kick the ball.
That's a good start.
He's kind of like, likes to run up to the same way like my dog, Pancakes, will like run up to other dogs, big dogs, and like try to sniff the butt. But then like when they turn around her, she runs away.
Okay.
He's kind of that way with soccer. He's very good at going to the action. He runs to the action. But then when the ball's there and it's time to kick it, he just kind of like turns around and runs back.
He's more of an observer.
More of an observer. But he's quick. He's pretty fast.
He'd be a good sideline reporter.
Yeah, and if the ball hits him right in the leg and he has no choice, he's pretty good at kicking it like back.
Okay.
But he doesn't really, and if like he's playing defense and someone comes at him, he just kind of clears. It's like opens up the lane.
He lets him go. He's Matador defense.
Yeah. So, you know, there's my description. He's a good kid. He shows up. Because you also have to rank them on attendance because it's important. If kids don't show up every week.
Hey, 90% of success is showing up.
You do have to have a team.
I think it's 99%.
So I'm going to go ahead because I know this, but I'm going to give him a 10 on attendance. So that'll be good because he's showing up every week, I believe.
Okay. So overall, I'm going to give him.
But I got overall skills and then I got defensive skills and offensive skills. What do you give him?
Oh, let's just go overall.
Just go overall.
We got to do this
quick. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Overall, I'm going to give him a 7 out of 10.
Really?
because I haven't heard any of the other kids yet. Oh, wait, but he's never kicked the ball.
It's based on the whole league, though.
I give him a three.
You're not ranking them against the kids on the team. Yeah.
Ah, okay, three. Three
yeah,
out
yeah.
of ten.
Let's, we're not going to be that kind of school that gives everyone 100.
Okay, good,
we're not
good,
doing
good,
our jobs here.
This is Junction. This is yeah. Junction
okay.
Boys.
Okay, kid two.
Yeah.
Okay, kid B. He is our leading scorer. He can put the ball in. He's got energy. He can just take the ball and just go with it.
Okay.
Run. He can kick it. Scores the goal. But he's also like a little temperamental. If we start losing, he likes to run off the pitch and not play anymore.
Ooh, that's bad for team chemistry.
He doesn't really play any defense.
Sounds like no one plays defense.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that. So,
okay.
What do you think about this one?
This sounds like a Boogie Cousins situation
yeah,
to me.
He's our Boogie.
He's very talented, but sometimes, yeah, a locker room cancer. Yeah. Look, I'll give him a five.
Oh,
okay.
Because
at some point you need talent.
Yeah, he does have talent. He's
yeah,
got
yeah,
offense.
Yeah.
He's the only one who really consistently can score if need be. So
okay, let's go five.
You're gonna give him five. I'm gonna give him probably a little higher.
What's his attendance?
He's about a nine on attendance. Nine out of ten. I think he's been there every week but one.
So. I'll give him a six then. I'll All give right. him a six.
All right. Kid C, we'll call him.
Okay.
He's got excellent. I'm just gonna tell you, he's got international genes. So I see. I think he's gonna
ten.
I'll
give him a ten.
I think he's got promise. And he's
wait,
got
wait,
good hair.
International like me? Like
no, no. He's like both of his parents weren't born in America, so I feel like he's got soccer genes, and he's got good, cool soccer hair going. He's got good look. But he doesn't really. He's another one who doesn't really like the ball to come at him. He's a little. He's not as afraid of the ball, but he doesn't. He likes to play defense. Never wants to play offense. Refuses to play offense.
That's not bad.
But you know, sometimes on defense, he sort of doesn't pay attention. That's a big problem on the whole team. But he's probably number one.
Sounds like a meme.
Where he doesn't really look at the ball coming at him. He just sort of like he's like kicks it and then turns around or doesn't. He runs. Like facing back, like running, looking the way you're running, so you're not looking at the other team when he's, running, when he's backpedaling. So the ball's, you know, he's on defense, but teams will score.
He
anyway.
Loses the ball sometimes.
Yeah.
So what's his attitude? What's his attendance?
His attendance is excellent. He's a 10 on attendance. He was mad that they didn't have the game last week because it was called.
Okay.
1 week.
So he wants to play.
He wants to play. Does like to play. He's a little yeah. So that's good. Good
I'll
attitude.
Go. Let's go five.
Five. All right.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
seems like a fair rating. And then I'll give you, I guess, one more kid.
Oh, give me one more kid.
One more kid. Kid D, because, you know, we have...
Yeah.
They're all kind of have the same issues that my team has. It's the system we run. I have a team that's a broad stroke.
At some point, you got to point the
finger
at
yourself. I
have
a team of intellectuals. They're like, they think about things. They don't just run. Like,
yeah.
You know, Kid B is the closest to kid who runs, but...
They're all going
to
be coaches
yeah,
someday.
Yeah. So Kid D, I will tell you, is excellent on defense. He's our best defender. He's can actually make plays on defense. He listens to coaching, and that like one of our coaches drew up a play that involved passing, and he made a pass. It's the first completed pass all season. He made the pass backwards because the other player didn't run with him. The other kid stayed in the back, so he actually passed the ball to the wrong side of the field. But
wow.
And he's coming. He's improving as a kicker, and he scored. He scored some goals recently. So he's got one issue in that he refuses to practice. He just sits
there. Oh, I like that.
He does not participate.
He's the Allen Iverson.
He does not participate in the practice. Sometimes he just runs off from middle practice and leaves the pitch to go to like another game. And he like Iverson, he's got two speeds. Either doesn't want to play or he doesn't want to come out, refuses to come out. But he's got a spin move. And so what do you give this one?
I'm going to give him an eight. I love the non-practicing. I love the spin move. And I love that he scored a couple goals.
All right. So this is the one I'm going to disagree with you why, and I have a very good reason.
Okay.
This is Teddy Kaplan.
Oh!
And I don't want to give him an eight, and I got one reason. I want to give him like a two.
Oh.
Because I want him to be in a stacked team next fall. So I got to give him a low rating. Because if
True.
He's on a low rating, they're going to balance him out with some superstars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
And
okay.
He's going to be in a better mood. If he wants to join like the Warriors, like he wants to be Omri Caspery.
Yeah.
He wants to play for the minimum, get a ring. And then he can use that experience to move on. So I don't want to give him an eight, but thank you for that.
Okay.
Anonymous eight. I'll tell him. So that's. I think we've settled some things here. I don't know where I'm going. Thank you.
All right, great. Well, now Ints is an app.
It is. And
we have someone Intsing again this week. We're doing something a little different.
Yeah, we're changing it up.
We talked to Ikram and the boys upstairs, and they said, hey, we can pick any Ints of the week, any Ints that somehow relates to our podcast. We'll play it. I don't even think these people know we're playing it. It's a little bit creepy, but they put it out there. It's public. So we're going to take that Ints. We're going to play it now, and we'll answer whatever question they're asking. So let's play the Ints.
All right, let's play it.
So I'm here with my best friend, Ima, and we are looking through my India article for Chow Magazine, and Ima actually had a really interesting fact to share with us.
So everyone in America, or in English, is just always calling it chai. It's not chai, people. It's cha. I'm not really sure who put the I there, but it's cha. And when you guys are talking about chai tea, you're just saying TT or titties.
Because chai actually means tea.
Chai means tea, or cha. Cha means tea. Yeah.
Cha. So you would just, so if you were to order a drink, you would say
cha. Can I have some cha?
Have some
or,
cha.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's really funny? In Chinese, it's ta.
Oh, interesting. Oh, I did not know that.
Well, interesting.
I guess you guys made tea, right?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. Okay. Chinese. So we're signing off.
All right, well, thank you, Chow and Ima. You can follow them on Ints at what?
At Chow, C-H-A-U.
At Chow. Blow her up.
Blow her up, yeah.
So here's the thing. Okay, so chai tea, I don't know, someone
well,
added
first of all,
line.
I thought it was chai this whole time.
You
That's
thought it was
I
a Jewish.
It. I call it chai. Can we go with that?
I thought tea was invented in Israel.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's...
they say China.
Okay, so what do you, yeah, do are they very proud of their tea in China, bubble tea and all that stuff, or no?
Yeah, I mean, all the tea in China is a phrase,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Which is why I thought it was really ballsy when Starbucks came to China. I get bringing coffee, but they also sell tea.
Right.
And it's like, bro, like, you don't bring sand to the beach. Like, we got enough tea in China. And then they also sell, Starbucks sells it for, like, way too expensive. Yeah. It's like $5 for a tea.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
like, you realize we're water. In the land of
this
tea.
This is the land of tea, yeah.
Yeah, you can get
you
it anywhere.
Go to the land of chocolate and bring your Hershey's and sell them for a lot. But I want to thank, you know, I've my wife works for an Indian company, as you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I sometimes go during market week to, like, these mixers where it's, like, you know, almost everyone in the company's Indian. And now I got a tidbit. I could give it a little, like, I could go a little, like, TT tidbit, you know, a little conversation starter.
Exactly. Yeah, you always
I'm on your guys'
you
side.
You can mansplain a little bit.
I'm a little mansplain.
Yeah.
We're always T-splaining.
We're always looking for new things to mansplain.
That's my whole life,
but
is
it
just
is,
flying out conversation starters.
It is weird that people, like, it changed from cha to chai. I have no idea how. But also, like, bubble tea is jinju nai cha, like, bubble tea. Do you know what that is?
No.
Okay, but in America, like, they call it bobo tea or something like that.
Oh.
Like, you can't say the word bubble. Bubble is an English word.
Yeah.
But, like, boba. They call it boba.
Boba.
I don't know where that came up. Where they come up. It's like the little tapioca balls in milk tea, you know? Yeah. So, I don't know. Americans are idiots. Yeah. That's the point.
I don't put milk in anything. I don't put milk in coffee, so I'm not going to put it in tea. So, I'm not going to try that.
All right. Well, that's it.
But thank you for answering us. And now people ants more frequently because you never know. You know, we might find your ants and we might blow it up. So
when you're going to get on Lost in America,
even if you forget to tag us now, we have a team of people, interns, searching ants for
all over the world
good content.
All right, let's get to Brian Goldberg.
All right, bring him in,
Mr. Bing.
Yeah.
We are back with our guest, Brian Goldberg. Brian, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, guys. Hi.
Mr. Bing.
Yep, it's Bing. Mr. Bing. That's the nickname. There are.
So wait,
how
explain.
Come up with Bing?
Well, Bing means, it's Gen, the food we sell is Gen Bing,
oh, okay.
Right? So the short version of it is just, is Bing, right? On the back of my, well, on the back of the t-shirt's a big Bing, and it's Lao Jin Gen Bing, Goldberg's Chinese crepes, and the last character is Bing. So it's anything flat, round, and edible in Mandarin's a Bing. And then Gen Bing is obviously what we do is the grilled version of the
so when was the first, because Gen Bing, as you said, it's these like crepes, these Chinese style crepes that I have been eating since I was 22 years old. When I first got to China, there was a guy who sold them for 50 cents on my street.
And
so can you explain exactly what it is? Is it it's flour?
Mm-hmm. So with it's a savory traditional northern Chinese crepe folded into a sandwich. That's the easiest way to say it. More specifically, it's basically a mung bean flour, rice flour, and wheat flour crepe. But you can also use millet flour. You can use buckwheat. You can use purple rice flour. Every vendor has their different types of flours that they use.
Right.
But it's not French. It is not. French crepes are just buckwheat and sometimes with milk and sugar and
it's
things
French
like
crepes.
That. Very different.
Every girl who's been abroad is obsessed with French crepes.
Yeah.
Nutella, you don't have a Nutella and banana in your... These
we do have a Nutella. We are launching. We have had before Nutella Bing, and we are relaunching
right.
it. But it's in a Chinese
popular.
Crepe. It's right,
right.
a Nutella in
it's
a Chinese.
Thing. It'll still do well.
Different.
With
so
like,
it'll do well.
When
Mr.
was the first time
Mr.
you
Goldberg.
Had it?
First time I had it was in 1998 when I was a student in Beijing, study abroad. I was 21 years old. I was 21.
Wow, and you went to Beijing?
Yeah, studied abroad in Beijing in 1998. You know, I was an undergrad at Brandeis in Boston, and I was supposed to go to medical school, was pre-med, got in early acceptance to medical school without taking the MCATs. I was actually a really good student. I was supposed to be become a doctor like a nice little Jewish boy does in New York, and I wasn't going to become a lawyer. That was the other option.
Right.
I hated reading and writing, and it's like lawyers. That's, I wasn't going to work. So it was doctor stuff. But then I was dating a girl that I kind of grew up with, actually, who was Chinese-American, whose family owned Chinese restaurants in our hometown up in Rockland County, a bit north of here. It's called Khan's Mongolian Garden. And it was awesome. It was one of those big stone, hot stone things, and they cooked the food freshly in front of you, which we also do. And that, I guess, had a little bit of an inspiration to me, right? So when I went to college, you know, you had to take a language. So I took Chinese.
I don't even know if they offered Chinese. I went to college in 2000.
You went to Miami. I don't think
in Miami
offer,
there was
they don't
no,
even offer English. There.
There was one Chinese girl, and it turned out later she was from Singapore. So there was no Chinese people in the whole
Chinese
school.
In Miami.
So they had it at Brandeis, and then they had an abroad program to Beijing.
Yeah. So you know they were the abroad program. I went on two semesters. Initially, first semester was in Harbin, way up in the northeast of China. It was a 16-hour train ride north of Beijing.
Yeah.
Not far from the North Korean border.
Really cold.
Very well. We were there in the summertime, so it was actually pretty comfortable. But yeah, it is famous for the ice festival. And the reason we went there is because the program there was like a total immersion program where you sign a contract not to speak any English.
You did that?
Yes.
Was that because it was paid for by the U.S. government?
It's subsidized by the U.S. government.
I knew a kid who did that, and he would have to sneak out. He did it in Suzhou, where I was living, and he would have to sneak out on the weekends and come talk to us. He was like, I just have to speak English. I haven't been able to do it all week. He's like, but you can't tell anybody.
You should have read him out.
If anyone finds out, like, my whole thing gets taken away.
Why do we subsidize people learning Chinese? That's very...
Well, we got to spy on somebody.
It seems very American of us, but it sounds cool.
Well,
so were you one of those people that when you showed up in Beijing, you already spoke... I'm just kidding, by the way. But when
a lot of the kids in that program, some of the kids in that program went on to work for the CIA.
See? There you go.
Oh. One of my best friends that I made in the second semester in the Beijing program, which was the same style of, like, sign a contract, you can't speak English. If you get caught speaking English three times, they send you home and you lose the tuition, whatever you paid. So it was a really serious program. And you did have to sneak off campus to go speak English for a little bit with your friends. And, like, seriously, pray that none of the teachers saw you.
Yeah.
What if you talk to yourself? Like, you're, like, crazy. You're like, oh, it's in my head. I have a voice in my head. I'm talking to myself.
Yeah. It was frowned upon.
Okay.
frowned upon.
Not good for the CIA, I guess.
But it was amazing. But, I mean, we had roommates who were from China, like Chinese that didn't speak any English, and my roommate was from the countryside of China, outside of Xi'an, in a small city called Baoji, and he not only didn't speak any English at all, he had a lisp.
Okay, in English or in Chinese?
In Chinese. So I had to learn Chinese a lot from my roommate who had a lisp.
So did you develop a lisp when you started talking?
I know. I don't know why they came up with the word lisp and put an S in it. Couldn't they have chosen a different word? It's really not. I don't know.
Wait, so when did the business thing come about?
So, well, when we ate Bings every day in Beijing, before school, we'd wake up in the morning and there was a Bing cart right outside the school. And basically that was breakfast every day, and it became lunch and dinner oftentimes. And that's when we just sort of casually, as like friends in there studying abroad, we're like, wouldn't it be great to bring it back to New York? Wouldn't it be cool to do it in America? Yeah, it was just like a talk, right? A lot of people talk about
people
that.
Always do when they go abroad.
Oh, everyone has
like,
an idea.
Oh, I'm going to bring this back to America. This is amazing.
Oh, you know what the main one always was? Oh, there's a bring back to America, or there's the idea of like taking something from America and bringing it there.
Oh, that is
well. You did that one.
The number one like stoner idiot thing was in China, everyone wanted to open a miniature golf course.
Oh.
Did you know anybody?
No.
You hung out with the right people.
They don't have miniature golf in China?
No. And everyone I talked to was like, bro, don't. And everyone was like, don't tell anybody, but I got this idea, but you cannot steal it. I'm going to open a miniature golf course. Literally no one ever.
They have regular golf in China.
They do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No one's thought of the mini.
No one's thought about the mini.
I mean,
all you have to do is get a carpet and a castle.
Another great activity to take the kids and want to kill yourself, but go on.
Yeah.
The fashionista girls would love the mini golf in China because they love to wear the high heels. And some of them go out and play sports, they don't like getting dressed up in sporty stuff. Like when they go hiking, you've seen a lot of those pictures of mainland Chinese women wearing
heels?
high heels and a Gucci dress, and they're hiking up a mountain with their family.
My wife respects that.
Yes. That's braggable.
Yeah. I think they would love the mini golf.
Yeah. So he could do that with mini golf. So, so as you're saying, all these people had these ideas to like take something from here and brew it over there. But you went to Hong Kong. Or wait, where'd you start at first? I don't want to jump ahead.
Okay, so basically, I opened Mr. Bing for the first time in Hong Kong 5 years ago. Like exactly 5 years ago, almost to the day. Yes.
So you only went to China for like a semester, and then you moved back to America.
Yeah. So I
had a life.
So what were you doing back? Yeah, when you moved back after.
So I was there 6 months, came back, and I graduated at Brandeis, and then I did two things. I always had a dream to go to the Olympics, so I chose the sport of luge.
Wait, stop.
What about medical school?
Wait. I had a dream to go to the Olympics, and then I bought tickets and went and watched in 2008 Beijing.
Oh, wow.
Your dream, I'm not bragging, I'm saying your dream is much different. You had a dream to be in the Olympics.
Yeah.
But have you done luge before?
Are you an athlete?
I am.
Okay.
I am. I grew up, I was a competitive swimmer. I learned how to swim before I learned how to walk. My mom was a lifeguard. Oh. Threw me in the water very early, so I raced in swimming up until high school. Was decent, but not like crazy good. I also didn't really like endurance sports. Okay. But I played baseball, and then I got really into golf, played competitive golf high school, and played college golf for Brandeis Division III. It was fun.
Great.
It was great. But, you know, luge, I always used to watch luge on TV in the Olympics and just thought it was really cool. You know, going fast in the ice, I like cold weather. I just thought it would be something I was good at. I don't know. It's like a balance thing. It's like a balance and a mental sport more than anything else. And I saw a TV commercial during the 94 Lillehammer Olympics that said, if you are interested in trying the sport of luge and trying out for the United States National Development Team, call this phone number, 1-800-USA-LUGE. No. I was 17 years old. I was in high school. I called the number.
Probably
I got through. Sorry?
Probably the only guy who called it.
You can watch this on YouTube. Type Brian Goldberg luge, and you'll see a six-minute-long NBC Olympic TV show profile on my what happened, on my whole life and how this happened. And they show that commercial. They show a clip from the commercial.
Oh, my God.
So what happened when you called the number?
So I got through, and I signed up for this little tryout, which happened in the summertime on wheels in Westchester, where they put you on a luge sled and to see if you can steer it down like a concrete hill with orange cones. And I did really well.
This is blowing my mind. Like you just blasted through. Yeah. I had like 19 different questions, but I don't want to stop you.
Sorry. It's a little diversion.
Wait. Training when they're 3 years old, they start and like and they start train their whole life.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know you could just do it a couple times and be in the wait.
No,
so,
it took 3 years to get to the Olympics.
Oh, okay. But, well, wait. So.
But I mean, 1984, you were how old? You were
17. Right? I just turned 40.
Do they still have
my birthday?
Can you still just go sign up for this kind of stuff? Like, is there commercials on TV now on NBC? That's
they
like,
don't have 1-800 numbers anymore.
Want to join the Olympics? Call this number, 1-800-BASKETBALL, right. And you can be on our like dream team.
Well, for the weirder sports and the
you got to focus on weird sports.
Yeah, like luge or ski jumping or maybe curling or like something like that.
Biathlon. Skiing and shooting.
They do recruit for it. I don't know if they still play a TV commercial like that, but the U.S. Luge Federation does go around the country looking for little kids that might be interested in it, and they try to recruit them, like especially if you don't live that far away from Salt Lake City or Lake Placid or cold places where there's a luge track.
Okay,
because like you can't even grow, like when you grow up, there's ski places all over the place, but it's snowboarding, obviously. But yeah,
yes.
You need to be like near a place where the Olympics have been or something.
Yeah, there's
but
only. There's
I grew
only...
up near Lake Tahoe, and they weren't coming. I mean, an hour and 15 minutes away. I skied every weekend. They weren't coming to my school and be like, "Does anyone want to be in the Olympics? Right. Come sign up, even for luge,
well,
which would have been a winter
is like
sport."
A sport where you, like so many people like they find. You
know, I guess everyone wants to do it.
Yes.
So you answered this. Okay, so you call the number and they go, "Yeah, come on, come." And you, next thing you know, you're on a like a hill in the middle of the summer. Or?
Yeah. So I did pretty well at it, but they were like, "You're pretty good, but we're." Taking like 10-year-olds, 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds.
Oh, that was commercials for 10-year-olds.
It was supposed to be. I went and I did decently well. I was kind of like on the borderline.
10-year-olds.
Yeah, but
they did
were like
the strength training and you're destroying all the competition because
you're just beating kids up.
There was a little bit of that.
Like, now fight.
It wasn't just luge. Yeah, they're like, do pull ups, do push ups, like, do like all sorts of things. And I'm like, you know,
you're
so,
like, easy.
But
you're like
it was
Billy Madison in second grade.
Sort of. It sort of was a little like that. And I was a little. Depressed and disappointed, and because they were like, "Well, you're about to go to college, aren't
ageism.
You?" And
that's ageism, but go on. Yeah.
Well, it was. I had a scholarship to go to Brandeis, and they're like, "Kid, don't give up your college scholarship to go to a great school. you know, luge, it's going to be really tough. You're starting a little bit late in life. You know, maybe if you want to try it after you graduate college, give us a call. And we'll see what, you know, we'll see what we can do for you. So I was really disappointed. It was like a shattering a dream, right? At that time,
Had you, what did you do to prepare for this tryout? Did you ever, go down a skateboard down your street or something? Or like,
it's funny that you mentioned that. I, when you watch luge on TV, they point their toes, right? When they lie down on their back and they look, they go down, they have to be as aerodynamic as possible.
Yeah.
So they have to point their toes. And I used to, because I have kind of flat feet and it's better to have an arch. So I used to go to bed at night and tuck the sheets around my feet really tight at the end of the bed. You know when you go to a hotel and they tuck the sheets super tight and you can't move your feet? There's there's a Seinfeld episode about this.
Yeah.
Yes. So I used to do that and tuck and try to get my feet more pointy, so that I could be more aerodynamic
it.
Yes, exactly. And I think I somehow got the phone number of one of the luge athletes and asked him for advice.
This is amazing.
He's listening to Yellow Pages.
Sort of.
Steve Luge Athlete McGee.
something like that. Something like that. So I did that. And then, but after college, I did the college, a Chinese thing, and learned about and came up with a big idea. But then after college, I wasn't ready to work yet. I wasn't ready to work, didn't know what I wanted to do. So I went to Taiwan for a little bit to learn more Chinese and hang out and shoot pool. And, you know, I dated a local girl there that didn't speak English. And that's how my Chinese got really good at that time. Rode a scooter around Taipei. I was having a great time. And some of my other friends that studied Chinese were also working there, teaching English, teaching Princeton Review, that kind of thing, right? I came back and I was like, I called the luge people. I'm like, remember me? I'm like, I speak Chinese now. Does that help?
You're like, I've been tucking my sheets in for 4 years now. And they were
girls are breaking up with me because I tucked the bed so tight.
So they were like, actually.
Wait, you told them you spoke Chinese now?
No, this was my angle. I knew that the Olympics had just happened in Nagano, 1998. The Winter Olympics had just finished. Okay. And they had the newest, most beautiful luge track in the world. And the U.S. Luge Federation told me if I wanted to try luge again, they could send me to Japan. And I could help. I would learn luge with the International Luge Federation, not with the U.S. But because I have Jewish background, I could get dual citizenship with Israel.
Wow!
Right, form the Israeli Luge Federation. The U.S. would help train me, right? Because they needed more countries to do luge. Like, if you don't have enough countries doing a particular sport in the Olympics, it gets kicked out. It gets kicked
out. And the U.S. is definitely the only country volunteering to help an Israeli team form, but
not just Israeli. There was like guys from Idaho that did it ultimately for Venezuela. And there were guys from, there were people from Australia, Liechtenstein, all sorts of connections with different countries where they could get dual citizenship or something like that.
Oh my gosh.
Right. And that, it happens a lot, not just luge, in a lot of sports.
Yeah.
Lot of sports. And it's getting harder and harder to do that now, but you can still do it. But at that time, I guess it was a little easier. And they supported me doing that. I went to Israel and Israel was like interested in it at the time. And I was able to translate Chinese for the Chinese athletes from Taiwan and China who were also starting to learn luge because they wanted China to have a team and Taiwan to have a team, right? That was just happening, especially because they had a track in Japan, which was so close to China and Taiwan, that they were able to go there. And the Koreans were starting to do it now. Korea has their own track now because they're hosting the Olympics in February.
Okay.
But I was able to be like a translator. Even though I was learning with them together, the coach didn't speak Chinese. The coach was Austrian, German. The Germans and Austrians, they're the ones that dominate luge, traditionally. Right. That's where the sport comes from.
Yeah.
Right? It's a very Tyrolean Alps, Germany, Austria, Northern Italy sort of thing. That's where it comes from. So, you know, my coach was like a former two-time Olympic medalist, right, who I was so lucky to have. And he coached us and the Chinese and the Taiwanese. And I would like translate in the Chinese, like, push harder on the third turn and move left. And
the Israeli guys,
things like that, you know.
Were the Israeli guys, the other guys, all Americans too, who are Jewish, or they find some actual.
I was the only one that did it for Israel.
Oh, you're the whole team.
I was the whole team.
Oh, well, I thought you needed like four guys.
I became the Israeli national luge team.
Was there a female? Was there a female competitor? Or no, they're just
no. Team. Unfortunately, not. I wish there was.
Yeah, it was just you.
Common. You're this.
That would have been nice.
Wow. You're the Jackie Robinson of Israeli luge.
Sort of. Yes. Sort of.
And so did you, between that time, when you showed up in Japan to start training,
yep,
Were you starting from ground zero, or had you kind of been doing stuff along the way?
It was pretty much ground zero. I had taken a couple of runs down the Lake Placid track, like when I was 17, like during a ski vacation with my like high school friends. You were able to go down as a tourist, but it wasn't a real luge sled. It was basically a tray with walls on it, and right. you would careen and like bang the walls all the way down. You couldn't really steer
like
it.
A ride.
Yeah. It was a ride for like $50. You'd get to experience like the luge, right? And you can still do that. They do it more with bobsled though. And so I really learned from scratch. Like, they gave me a sled, and I had they gave me like, you know, those skin tight Lycra racing uniforms and a helmet and the visor and the whole thing. And I learned how to do it. And I was there for like almost a month training, and I worked my way up. You don't start from the top right away. You go like turn by turn, and you work your way up. And then there was like the Asia Luge Championships that I participated in, which sounds big but was not. But that got me onto the World Cup circuit. Eventually.
So did you have to do well in that?
Or? Yes, I did. You had to qualify. You had to be able to go from the top and achieve a certain time and be within a certain percentage of like the top guys in the world. And I did that for
you
3 years.
Within a month?
I thought they needed people. I thought they were disqualifying people.
Well, the Olympics. To get to the Olympics, I had to do that.
Yeah.
So it was a 3-year journey. I worked my way
up.
Different.
So you were training. This is what you're doing for 3 years. It's training and
3 years. But I was also going to Columbia doing my master's degree simultaneously. Like spring and summer, I was doing school here. And then fall and winter, I was doing luge on the World Cup circuit. So that's what I did for 3 years. And that's...
And the same coach was doing like all these different countries? The same.
Yeah. So the International Luge Federation, they supported all these small countries, small non-traditional luge countries to get good enough at luge to be in the Olympics is what basically they did.
And what about, are you... Do they give you a subsidy to do this? They give you an apartment or something like that? Are you living in Japan?
We got paid a weekly stipend that helped cover some of our costs, but not all of it. I had to raise money from friends and family to like...
Sure.
I had saved up money for my bar mitzvah. I had bar mitzvah money left over that all went to
this
whole
thing. And you still
have
your Israeli citizenship, right?
I don't.
It's only temporary.
After the Olympics. Yeah, there was...
So they give you a lifetime.
No, It was a little bit of a painful story. I qualified for the Olympics for Salt Lake City in 2002, and a few months before the Olympics were about to start, Israel basically said that even though you've qualified for the Olympics and I had the letter and the invitation and the qualification and all that stuff, Israel's Olympic Committee policy is that if you're not top 5 or top 10 in the world and you don't really have a chance of winning a medal, you're not going.
Oh, really?
Not going.
We like to win.
Why not? Why not just be represented? Olympics. You know.
It was. You know.
Well, if they're giving for anybody or just someone who's like becoming a citizen for the, like if someone was born in Israel, would they say the same policy?
Well, that was always the question.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That was always the question. Was there a bias because I wasn't a native Israeli? Right. I didn't really speak Hebrew. I didn't serve in the army. Right. You know.
Well, if you said you'd serve in the army, would they let you? That's a big step to take.
It was a complicated situation.
Yeah.
You know, but. It was an amazing journey. I mean, it was 3 amazing years of my life. Met some great people. Actually, one of my roommate from the Luge World Cup circuit, who went to 3 Olympics, is actually, he just called me this morning. He's in town. We're catching up. And, you know, so I made some really good friends. And some of them are still, one of them's going to his 5th Olympics in Korea.
Wow.
He races for India.
Wow.
For India. Yeah.
Cap, so, is he actually Indian or does he just...
He is. Yeah. He's half Indian, half Italian.
Exactly.
But his name is Shiva Keshavan. So
I'm going to start training Teddy right now, my 5-year-old.
Yeah, he's a 5-year-old.
Oh, nice.
Or Ruby.
Yeah, and they'll never be good enough for the American team. But if I train them out, they can get an Israeli top 5, top 10 thing. And
by the time
especially
they're
in the female category, if it comes up eventually.
You can also do it for the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Oh,
and you
Virgin
can do
Islands.
It. There's other ways of doing this. But just try to do it for the U.S.
Has
first.
Israel ever had anybody since then? Do they ever have?
So after I founded it, it also opened the door for other people to do luge for Israel and bobsled and skeleton.
What's skeleton?
Skeleton is like luge, but head first.
Oh, my god!
You go down head
first.
That's
an Olympic sport?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Why? Just to be more nuts? Like, why would you go head first?
It's different technique.
Okay, so after all this, you're in Hong Kong, and you're like, hey, those crepes I ate however many years ago, I'm going to try those Chinese, GM Bing, I'm going to try to do that. I'm going to do that in Hong Kong, right? Start a small business.
I started to think that, okay, I want to start my own company. Right, I wasn't sure what, but I felt that I don't know. I just started getting that pang when I was about 35 years old to make something of my own. I said, you know what? One day when I die, I want to be able to say that I left something behind, physical and tangible, that changed the world, like, at least a little bit.
I still haven't got that pang yet. I'm waiting.
The what?
I'm 40. I'm waiting for the ping to come.
Kevin, you're on this podcast. This is happening right now. This audio will last forever.
I'm here to inspire you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
But that's a good point. So you're like, why don't I take this thing I learned a long time, or I ate a long time ago, and put it in Hong Kong?
Yes. I had taken a trip up to Beijing from Hong Kong one weekend just for fun to go hang out. I hadn't been back in a while. And we ate bings, like in the Hutongs, like near Nanlo, Guxiang, and like up there. And all those memories came rushing back. And it was like, oh my God, I wrote that business plan. Let me go find that business plan that I wrote. Maybe that's what I'm going to do. And that's what I did. As a side project, while still working in the bank, I opened up Mr. Bing in Hong Kong.
And did they already? Was there other people doing Bing in Hong Kong? Because it's right across the.
Nope.
Not at all.
Super not.
See, that's what it's just such a Hong Kong to mainland China. It's like two different cultures.
Yes.
It really is
so different.
Yeah.
New York is more similar to Beijing than Hong Kong is.
Yeah.
In many ways.
Especially Beijing. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was. You know, Hong Kong is southern China. It is Cantonese speaking. The food. Habits are very different than northern China. It's a 4-hour flight, right? 3 to 4 hour flight from Beijing to Hong Kong. And it's as different as like Miami is from New York or Havana, Cuba is from New York.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah,
I would compare it to that.
Puerto Rico versus
Havana. It's super different. And there's, you know, there's a long history of mistrust between Hong Kong and China. There's a lot of controversy with a lot of mainland Chinese moving into Hong Kong and how they act and all that thing.
So
no one was selling Genbing in Hong Kong really ever before. We were the first ones to do it. And that's why it became so interesting, because there were a lot of mainland Chinese people working in Hong Kong in finance and law that missed eating bings from the time when they were a kid, right? And they couldn't find it in Hong Kong. Also, foreigners like myself, expats, Americans, Brits, Aussies, a lot of whom who had been to China or studied Chinese or worked in China also loved genbings, right? And they hadn't had it in a while, or they couldn't have it in Hong Kong. So that's why it became so popular, and we made it kind of cool and hip, and like we played Mandarin punk music and rap and hip hop from Beijing and from Shanghai, and no one in Hong Kong had ever really heard that music or even really knew that there was like this cool emerging music scene coming out of China, right? And we'd use Chinese graffiti on the walls, and we put all these photos of crazy Beijing street scenes everywhere, right? Not just genbing carts, but like, you know, pictures from all like the cool music venues like Mao Live House and like those kind of places, right? And we created this little subculture right in the middle of central Hong Kong. And people would hang out and they would eat bings and they would reminisce about their time in China. But all the Hong Kong people were kind of scratching their heads.
This is what I was going to ask.
Right.
Because as you kind of previously mentioned, yes. Hong Kong people, there's a, like, they, I don't know if the words racism or hate or whatever it is, they do not like or resent mainland Chinese people. Not everyone.
Not everyone.
But potentially they do. Did they look at your business and be like, we don't want that culture coming here?
Most people were okay with it, especially because it was like a foreigner, a Laowai or a Guailo, like a white guy from New York that opened this like authentic Beijing street food place in Hong Kong. Most of them were interested in the story, in the background story.
It's a cool story.
Right. We got a lot of media coverage, and it was interesting. Most of them were interested in it. Some Hong Kong people liked the food. Others found it too spicy or Hong Kong people don't like spicy food, right? And genbing, you don't have to have it spicy, but it usually comes with some pretty heavy spice to it. And they're more into their fish or their noodles or their shrimp dumplings, like lighter kind of food. It's hot. It's humid in Hong Kong. Genbing is like a comfort food from northern China. It's like a heavy comfort food from northern China. So it just wasn't the best fit, you know. But there was we did write our menus in simplified Chinese, jianqizi, right, as opposed to fanqizi, which is the traditional Chinese characters that are written in Hong Kong, Taiwan, and most of the rest of the world. But in China and in Singapore, they use simplified Chinese characters. This is what Mao Zedong sort of implemented, was this simplified way of writing Chinese. And it's very, when people see that, that's very representative of communist China.
Of mainland China.
Mainland China,
so when a
yes.
Hong Kong person would see that, they would be like, oh, this is from there.
Yes.
So
we purposely wrote our menus that way because it was like, it was from, because we're a Beijing concept.
Authentic,
we want to be authentic.
It's Beijing, but it is all over
mainland.
It's kind of spread all.
We had it in Suzhou. I don't know. I genuinely don't know if it was the same kind or not. But I think. I've asked Yaya. She said, "Who my wife, who works in your company now." And she said it was pretty similar, but maybe not exactly the same.
Yeah. I mean, it was our classic Jianbing is done almost exactly the same way that my master chef in Beijing taught me how to do it. So I went around all these different – when I decided to finally launch this thing, I went to many vendors around Beijing and Tianjin and Shandong where it's originally from. It's actually not originally from Beijing. It's from the province next door to it. And I paid for a recipe from this one vendor who we thought was the best, and she came to Hong Kong and taught us how to do everything and helped train our staff. But we did add meat to it, like Peking duck and barbecue pork and chicken.
And they don't usually have
meat. Don't do that in China. They don't. They just have like the classic vegetarian one.
So yep. What has made it so successful in New York, more successful than it was in Hong Kong? To finish the Hong Kong part, you guys closed over there. And then you came here and reopened here.
Yes, a lot of learning lessons in Hong Kong. So in Hong Kong, a couple of things. One of the biggest mistakes we made there was the pricing point. We were selling it for $3, $4, $5 a piece, kind of competing with dumplings and noodles and other like Asian street, Chinese street foods there, because that's kind of what we are. And I had some people working for me who came from a McDonald's and a Subway sandwiches background, also similar price point there. And you know, as many as we sold, it was really hard to make a profit, you know, and there was a perception that this is a cheap Chinese street food, because Hong Kong people have been to Beijing, a lot of them, and they know that it's like a dollar or 50 cents there for a Bing. So it was really hard to sell it for much more than that. But rent there is like higher than New York. So when I decided to close the Hong Kong stuff, I moved back to New York. Left finance, took some time off. You know, my parents were getting older. I'm an only child. I'd been away for 13 years, 14 years. It was time to come home, right? And when I came back to New York, I saw this burgeoning food scene, right? Food halls, Epicurean food halls, right? Like Chelsea Market and places in Chicago and LA, the Grand Central Market, right? Like cool food scene, right? And people were looking for new, authentic, regional Chinese cuisines, like not beef and broccoli, not General Tso's chicken. Like Xi'an Famous Foods here has like 10 or something locations doing really spicy Sichuan like mala food, right?
Like specific stuff.
Specific stuff, right? And also a lot of concepts doing these one food concepts, like soup dumplings were becoming a big thing, or like just Korean tacos becoming a big thing, right?
Yeah, New Yorkers love like one item. If it feels like something's authentic, something that's like new, that they can be, you know.
Yeah, they love to be able to brag to other people that they've heard of something that no one else has heard of yet.
Yeah.
So they can go to work and be like, yo, you got to try this Mr. Bing, this Jianbing, even if they've never been to China. Like, it's from China. You don't get it. Like, and then they can feel better than other people. And so,
a bit. I mean,
that's what I like to do.
Well, no, New Yorkers don't want to eat like the regular like Chinese places. Like that.
You're right.
In general, not that in as far as that kind of food. Like, but like love like newer.
I still love my General Tso's chicken.
I do too. But I mean, I'm not your normal eater. But like they I feel like you're on some. Like, they just love like newer. Like,
yeah. Look, Jianbing's a beautiful food. I mean. It's made freshly in front of you in just a couple of minutes. It's customizable. It's got all these bright colors. It's got different layers of textures of crunchy and soft and spicy and sweet. And it's got, you can high protein it up if you want. You can do 2 eggs and 3 eggs. You can do low carb if you use half the amount of batter. You can cilantro or not. And it's just, it's super Instagrammable, right? And
that's the other thing.
Super Instagrammable.
People love Instagram.
That's important for this.
It's important for everybody now, no matter what you do.
My sister will come into New York and go to a place she saw on Instagram. Like, that's how she knows.
Right.
She didn't, like, read a review in the New York.
We got to get our podcast on Instagram. Yeah, how do we do that?
We have to have food or something. Yeah, a picture. our picture of us on Instagram is not going to blow things up.
But. Yeah, well, I mean, like, look, go scroll through your Instagram feed. It's food porn, like crazy, right? And ours is video graphable as well, like Snapchattable, right? You can make a 10 or a 20-second little video of making a Bing or a part of the Bing, or you can boomerang the egg cracking, and the egg cracks, and then it uncracks, and it cracks, and it uncracks, or you spin the crepe, and then you unspin the crepe.
So this was just a market that was like, just ready for what you were...
Yeah, for so many reasons. We accept Chinese mobile payments. You can pay with WeChat and Alipay at our stores, right? Using Chinese money.
You can pay with WeChat at Mr. Bing?
You can pay with WeChat Pay at Mr. Bing. At our St. Mark store. At our St. Mark store.
Kevin, you have WeChat. I got you.
I know, but I didn't know you put money in it. I didn't know you
Yes.
I'm an old man. I'm paying cash.
Step up your WeChat game.
Yeah. So, like, all these reasons, but the food, the China, sub-China culture thing, the China food thing, the food hall thing, the street food trend here.
Yes, very true.
Right? I mean, there, I can't even begin to tell you. And no one was doing it here. Yeah. Nobody, people, most importantly, nobody was doing it.
No one
yet.
Was doing
it.
Because people love street food, but they love it to be like not super cheap. They want it to be like in New York. They want to.
Elevated street food.
Elevated street food, exactly.
And elevated street food.
And then you've got the corner on Bing's. So.
Yeah, and you're not going to get sick from it, right? It's like it's a street food. In China, people love it. But a lot of them don't eat it. Even Chinese people in China sometimes don't eat Bing's because they're afraid they're going to get sick
on
the street.
Well, yeah, with the whole recycled oil like scam. That was
exactly.
Going on.
I like to get sick from street food. I feel better.
It's a rite of passage.
Like I'm more authentic, but you know, right, I guess I'm not the norm.
Are your customers? Are you finding them? Are they mostly Chinese people? Are they mostly American people? Are they tourists? What is it?
It's roughly just by eyeballing it. Honestly, yeah. It's like 70% just like Americans and like not non-Asian, non-Chinese. We're about 30% Chinese and Asian, roughly. And you know, maybe 20 to 30% mainland Chinese customers.
Okay.
Right? They really follow us on WeChat.
And how did they find it? Like, you mean tourists coming over that have heard about it somehow?
Tourists, but mostly people that live here.
Okay.
People from mainland China that live in New York, that go to school here, that work here.
And is it blowing their mind that they're buying Jim Beam from an American guy in New York?
A lot of times, not all the time. A lot of them have gotten used to it. They know the story, and they like it. You know, they like it, and they just eat it. But yeah, a lot of for the first time when they come, they're usually shocked, and they're like, "Oh, Mr. Bing, Lao Jin Jianmin, we're cooking the pai jiao ma,
cooking
the pai jiao, pai jiao, pai jiao." They want to take a picture. They want to take a picture with me, and it's like
you're
Mr. Bing.
It's crazy.
You're
that kind of name. You become a.
I feel like you should drop your Brian Goldberg. He's yesterday's news.
Yeah,
just Mr. Bing.
When you go on dates,
like Hulk Hogan is not Terry whatever Boella.
Yeah,
he's Hulk Hogan.
Yeah,
have everyone call you Mr. Bing. And then just like it's an inside joke, a few people know you as.
I know. Like, crazy story. We were in Maine last summer for a vacation. We were kayaking on a remote lake with a few other people that were on this little kayak tour, and there were some Chinese people on the kayak next to us, and they saw me. They looked at me and they recognized me.
Nice.
And they're like, "Are you Mr. Bing?" And that I was like, "Oh my god."
Wow.
My girlfriend was like freaked out.
She's dating a celebrity.
What is going on?
Wait, did you autograph their kayak or
anything? No.
Autograph their kayak.
It's really interesting. We've really, you know, WeChat, Chinese people use social media. Obviously, a lot, so do Americans, but Chinese, in a way, I think, have gone more. They use it more. It spreads more.
Agree.
It spreads faster, and they're faster with it. It's just the story has spread, and the Chinese media cover our story a lot. They love it. And I love doing it because I get to use my Chinese. It's like one of the only ways I get to keep up my Mandarin these days is like doing Chinese TV and radio interviews. And like,
we should have done this interview in Chinese.
We should have.
Yeah.
What do they call you, Mr. Bing, in Chinese? Bing Xinsheng or Jian Bing Xinsheng?
Lao Jin.
Lao Jin.
Lao Jin Jian Bing. Yeah, because it's gold. Jin is my Chinese name. It means gold. It works because I'm Goldberg.
Oh, yeah.
And Jin is actually a somewhat common name in China.
Oh, okay.
There you
gold.
Go.
Yeah. So, and there's Qin, right? If you ever hear Qin or last name Jin, J-I-N, that's the same. That's my family name. So it kind of works. So they just say, Lao Jin, Lao Jin. You know, so.
Old gold.
Old gold.
Old
gold, new Bing.
And then the, because people listen to this everywhere around the world, but around the United States especially, everyone's going to be like, when's it coming to my town? When's Mr. Bing coming?
Oh, okay. So good question.
What's your expansion? Do you have ideas for expansion or what is it?
So we have four locations going in New York right now, and that's pretty quick. I mean, last year we just did pop-ups around the street. We won the award for best new street food of New York. It was called the Vendy Award, which was great. The Vendys. Yeah, we won the Vendys.
I've heard of them.
Awesome.
And then we opened that first kiosk at Urban Space Vanderbilt next to Grand Central Station, 45th and Vanderbilt, in January. That one's doing really well. And then we opened the St. Mark's store, which is technically a pop-up. We're going to see how it goes. That has beer and wine, so it's turning into like Bing's and Beers. That's at St. Mark's and Avenue A. We just launched our mobile cart yesterday, right across the street from here at Madison Square Park, 24th Street and 5th Avenue. And it's really cool because that's the original way to do Bing's, is on the street on a cart. So we're really excited about it. It's got a bright neon sign on it. And then we're opening a store in Chelsea Nomad in January. That's where our office and our commissary is as well. And then after this, it's really, we want to perfect what we're currently doing. We haven't even launched breakfast yet. We haven't launched some of the other side menu items. We got to round out the model, right? Before you expand to other cities or even beyond, you know, in New York, you got to perfect what you're doing.
How does
otherwise
this change? Like, what's, because it already has eggs in it.
Yeah.
Like, but you put
So the breakfast bings will be a little bit smaller. We'll probably do a double egg as a standard, and you'll have like a maple glazed bacon bing.
Turner's in for that.
I'm bacon. I'm all in.
Yeah, maple glazed bacon, right? Double egg and cheese. You can have egg and cheese bing, double egg and cheese bing, bacon egg and cheese bing, and we'll have the Nutella bing as well because Nutella is just fantastic.
You can throw a lox bing in there to like a little.
Try to stay away from this. Try to stay away from the seafood. But if you want to pay an homage to like my Jewish family and like my mom and my grandma and our family, there might be the Mama's Brisket Bing.
Oh.
Mama's Brisket Bing, which is like the family recipe, the family recipe for the brisket, right? We tried pastrami. Didn't work. It's pastrami. Too much.
I like the idea you're just trying stuff out, though. Why not?
We're trying stuff out. It's what it
is.
It's what it is. So before, you know, we have a lot of requests to open around the country.
I think you got to open in L.A. because I heard those UCLA players when they're under house arrest. They were being served bings left and right, and now they have a hankering for them. Now they're back.
They do. They were there for a week.
So you got to.
All right. Well, Brian, thank you for doing the podcast. Yeah, Mr. Man. Bing, thank you for doing it. Everyone, when you come to New York,
go
if
to
you
his
live in New York, go check out Mr. Bing.
Please.
Tell him Lost in America sent you.
Yeah, do that, and he'll get something.
All right, Cap. Let's get to the news.
All right, let's do it.
Thanks, guys.
Brian Goldberg for joining us. Kaplan, let's get to the news.
He had to run. He couldn't do the news with us.
He did. He had to take off. He had to get back to Mr. Bing.
Got to make those, not crepes, make those bings.
Those bings don't sell themselves.
They do not.
First news story of the week, Kaplan. Oh, this is very local news. This comes to us from the Global Times, which is like the USA Today of China. It's the national newspaper of China in English.
Is it like an American paper that comes over? Or it's
a Chinese government owned, Chinese run paper, but that they write. They hire these hacks, these like Americans.
Right. Is it in color like the USA Today? Is it like
it's all that
grade level? Yeah, okay.
They hire these American hacks to write for them to spout their parties, the mouthpiece,
a bunch of sellouts
of China. Yeah. So this guy Christopher Cottrell writes an article for the Global Times. It's a hatchet piece attacking Joe Schaefer, the video that Joe Schaefer and I did, the viral video about expats in China returning to America and not knowing how to survive in America.
The very popular viral video, I would viral, call it.
It has over 4 million downloads, 4 million views
at
this point.
That's like HIV-level viral.
It's HIV level. That's what they're calling it in the news. So this guy goes after us, calls us. Here's what he says. Last month, it's a think piece about us and how horrible of people we are.
Think pieces in USA Today don't go together well.
But they don't work in the Global Times either. So Christopher Cottrell says, last month I happened upon a video by a so-called comedy troupe.
Whoa, so-called.
Based in Shanghai named Mama Hoo Hoo. Now that's the name of the guy who, the producer, his production company. Intrigued, I clicked on the link, hopeful to see some professional expat comedians. While Mama Hoo Hoo does produce mildly amusing content, this one about reverse culture shock not only fell flat, it ticked me off. Then he goes on to call us racist. He says we're terrible people. He calls us economic refugees who went to China after 2008. We're millennials. We had no job prospects in our home countries.
Not very accurate.
We both went in 2004.
Well, we didn't have job prospects.
Neither one of us are millennials. He said, I hope someone with proper comedic training makes a short, funny video. But until then, I've yet to watch one about reverse culture
shock. What is proper comedic training?
What are we supposed to take, a comedy class? So he says everything we say. What we say is like, when you come back to America, like when you talk to your taxi driver, it's stuff we've talked about on this podcast. You talk to your taxi driver, you're surprised that he speaks English. So you're telling crazy stories to your friend, and you're like, he says, at one point, we're drinking in the back of the taxi. Will Sylvence plays the taxi driver. He tells us to stop drinking. We're smoking cigarettes. He tells us to stop doing that. Ha ha, it's funny. But the best part about this article is Christopher Cottrell. Not only does he call us hacks and racist, but then he decides that he decides to use our premise and suggest his own hilarious bits.
Oh my God.
So instead of doing what we did, he says what we could have said is his observation when he came back is that Americans are disgustingly fat.
Oh.
So we should have made a joke about that.
But then it's a joke about Americans, not about what you were doing.
He says, and I quote, "Nothing sickened me more when I came back than the ever-rising obesity of my own countrymen.
Right. So this is your typical abroad hates American.
Yeah. Like, so he said you should say that instead of say that you could smoke cigarettes in a taxi.
But
in
that
China.
Wouldn't be saying anything new. And Americans are fat.
It's also not that funny.
Although, go on.
And then he says later that we should say that Chinese let their babies pee in bushes.
That's funny.
So that would have been funnier if we did that. I feel like if we would have done that, he would have called that racist.
Right, you should have had, you should have had like my kids pee in a bush. You should have been telling them, they should have had them for the parting.
And then his last thing he says is that he went to a concert when he was in Las Vegas and he tried to get money out of his bank and then his wife got mad at him because he forgot that they had the same bank. They shared a bank account, which they didn't do in China. That's him specifically. I don't share a bank account with my wife.
Yeah, this is people don't understand comedy. For stars, it's a comedy video on YouTube. It's not like a.
Listen, I don't tell you, Christopher Cottrell, how to. We should on this pod tell him how to write a hack article for the New York Times for the Global Times.
We might do that, but let me tell you two things. One, he's wrong. Kids in America piss in bushes. The nannies, I see it in Long Island City. They're too lazy to like take the kids to the bathroom,
totally.
So they just have them pee in a bush, and parents don't let them do that.
But baby pee doesn't count as pee anywhere.
Yeah. One day I'm gonna do an LA on that. What the age limit is, but we'll say that because I don't know how old I can let my kids get away with that. But you know, he makes a mistake here. He's proposing things. What about come to me? Because guess who was not in this Mama Who video?
Kaplan.
I was not in it. So you want to do?
Yeah, you're a bigger racist than I am.
So I'm kind of against. I'm kind of in his camp actually. I was left out of this viral video. If he wants to make one about fat Americans, I'm your guy.
Oh,
contact me. We'll go at you guys.
So you'll make a government Chinese government sponsored.
Yes, fat American video. I'll line up some fat
guys American
I know.
Video.
I'll bring the fattest people I know to a casting call.
Sounds good. Next story. This comes to us from Fox News.
All right. It's about the same quality as the Global Times, I'm sure.
Exactly. Paris has finally opened a restaurant for diners who prefer to consume their food in the nude.
Oh, who doesn't?
The restaurant's called Au Naturel. It's the city's very first nudist restaurant. It opened on November 2nd. But here's one thing, Cap. The waiters and kitchen staff will keep their clothes on for hygienic reasons.
I was going to say, do they have like the grading system, the A, B, C? Is that based on how hot the staff was? But then you told me.
Well, first of all, I got to say this is a great Tinder date move.
Yeah.
First date, if you want to lay all your cards on the table.
Right.
You say, we're going to Au Naturel.
Au Naturel. And it's completely naked? Like, it's like.
Completely naked.
Because I've never been to a nude beach, have you? I don't.
No, because here's the thing, and I guarantee the same. It's all fat people, right? Nude
right.
beaches?
Well, I've been to topless beaches, and the only women who are topless are usually like. Not ones you want to look
at. The only guys that are topless are guys with boobs.
Well, all guys are topless.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Here's what I think. Guys in Speedos are the guys with the, yeah. Honestly, like, I don't know how you go to a place where everyone's naked, and if, say, there are, like, hot, like, it's, like, weird. Didn't you have a whole mind? It's hard enough to go on a date as it is.
Yes.
But now you got to be like, oh, I can't get an erection.
Exactly.
But then it's like, if you don't get an erection, like, it's kind of like, are you gay? Like, what is this? Like, it's
very, well, what if you're eating?
There's a stressfulness to this.
What if you're eating some Chinese, some Asian food that, like, oh, it's, like, good for a man's virility?
Yeah, ooh, that's
like,
it.
You know?
But maybe you want, yeah, and then I.
You're eating, you're like, tiger, you're snorting a tiger.
It changed my whole ordering thing because, like, I used to always never get, like, things with sauce and stuff. Like, I was always, like, steak, and because I would make a mess. I don't want to get stain on my shirt.
Well, that's an upside.
But if you're not wearing a shirt.
Yeah.
Now you're like, hey, and then it becomes a whole kinky thing. Like,
stain away.
This off me. Like, you want to.
Edible underwear.
And what are you allowed to do? Like that scene in Sliver where he's like under the table, like fingering her through the things. And like, what, like, where does that go in a restaurant like this? I don't know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Louis C.K. needs to stop apologizing and start, you got to lean in.
Right. All the sexual predators should be going, they should have a restaurant for them at sex rehab. Oh, to test them. All these guys with this bullshit about sex rehab. This is a final test to pass the class. You got to go to a nude restaurant. You got to sit there with a woman who's naked across from you. And you have to not
pop a bone.
Well, not jerk off, but not like in a bush or anywhere, and not just grab her.
Yes.
You have to get consent, and you have to
sit there and eat your cheeseburger.
Yeah, and I mean Harvey would like that because he likes to eat, but like, you know, but you know, and
all the fat
and
guys.
It's got to be specific. Kevin Spacey, he's going to get out of sex rehab. You got to sit there with some hot dudes, and you know, just sit around
some kids.
This is a great idea.
This is a billion dollar idea.
Sex rehab.
Ching. Plus, you get to eat a great meal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. How is the food? They say. I
think it's fine. I don't know if it's Michelin rated.
Yeah.
Or what,
is Michelin going to go in there?
Final news story of the week. This is from the Marshall News Herald in Marshfield, Wisconsin. Kaplan, a 38-year-old man in Marshfield, Wisconsin, got locked in a beer cooler all night and decided what's he going to do if he's locked in? He decided to stay there and drink beer while locked inside, according to a police report. While he was inside from 11:50 p.m. when they locked and closed up the store until 6:13 a.m. During that time, he drank 3 malt liquors and an 18-ounce bottle of beer. Finally, the police issued the man a citation for retail theft.
Yeah, I actually explained to international, like, and even city listeners, because at first I was confused, but then I remembered back in Pennsylvania we have these things with these, like, a giant store that has, like, every beer, and then they'll have, like, a freezer almost. You can, like, it's like a cold room.
A walk-in freezer? Because, like, I didn't get
that
either.
Like, yeah, instead of having, like, a slide-away fridge the way you would have, like, in a, you know, in a supermarket or in a bodega.
Yeah.
They have so much beer that they have, like, a giant room, like a cold room, basically. You go in and you can pick out your cold beers, like, if you want something cold. So he somehow got locked in. I don't... Is there closing?
I mean, to me, this guy's a hero.
Yeah.
Hero of the week. If you're going to be locked inside somewhere, you might as well, you know, make hay while the sun shines.
What are you supposed to do? I mean, I
drink away.
As we discussed,
if I'm locked in a gun store, I'm going to shoot off a couple rounds. You know? While I'm waiting. You got to kill time.
Well, you know, I used to work, as we've talked about before, at Arby's.
Yes.
And every Saturday morning, I'd have to get to work very early in the morning because we'd have to pick the big Arby's truck would come in.
Of course.
You know, people are camping out if the guy had to make it through tight security, people are trying to rob that truck left and right in the street.
Get that
bandits are out there. So we would have to unload the stuff into the freezer. And it's very sexist, actually. They always have just the guys who do this because it was like you have to go into this cold room.
Okay.
And it's a freezing room because they're putting in the roast beef and stuff. And I used to like be like I used to have a fear. Like, what if I get locked in?
You can, like, eat your way out.
That's what I didn't think about.
That's why this guy's a hero.
But I'd rather be drinking beer, is what I'm saying, than eating frozen roast beef.
And I really take issue with the fact that this guy got a citation from the police. I think, listen, all these action groups are standing up and marching for whoever, blah, blah, blah. Right. We're the alt-middle.
This is an alt-middle cause.
This is where we need to do a rally. We need to descend.
Right. If a store store screwed up, they locked him in. He's free brain, you know. I'm sure Mr. Bing would say, if you're locked in my thing, go nuts.
Exactly.
You know,
eat as many things as you want. Yeah. You take a little blame. We need to get everyone who's listening to us in Wisconsin, get out. Call your senator.
Wisconsin's kind of a swing state sometimes. This could be an issue.
We got to get this guy out of jail.
Wedge issue, as they call it.
Yeah. So. We'll get there. We'll have a march. It'll be the alt-middle.
The alt-middle march on Wisconsin.
Exactly.
Coming soon.
We're back. Cap, that's all. What should we do?
We should go buy tickets for the live pod, and then we should get lost.
Thank you, Brian Goldberg. Go to Mr. Bing. Thank you, Mr. Bing. Get lost.
Chinese food takes away my stress. Now I'm going to go eat Panda Express.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.